I'm Afshin Ratansi. Welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world on the anniversary of the Odessa massacre when neo-Nazi Ukrainians burned trade unionists alive. We're broadcasting from a UAE that this week withdrew from OPEC Plus, no longer binding itself by output quotas in an increasingly volatile world where oil is weaponized. This in a week where U.S. President Donald Trump signaled withdrawal of U.S. troops from Europe and survived a third assassination attempt, just ahead of his ex-FBI boss nemesis James Comey being indicted for trying to kill him. And then there was, of course, a visit to D.C. from Sir Keir Starmer's latest emissary to Washington. Not Epstein's friend Peter Mandelson this time. Instead, it was the brother of Epstein friend Prince Andrew, King Charles III. He was sent to Trump to persuade him into more war on Russia. But was it in vain, as afterwards Trump and Putin had a 90-minute phone call? But anyway, Trump hasn't finished with his war of aggression yet. His Netanyahu's wars on Iran and Lebanon have killed perhaps 3,000 civilians. Though millions have been displaced. And the wars began with a targeted strike on an elementary school that killed 168 schoolgirls. The Pentagon is apparently still investigating that atrocity. But then Pentagon boss Pete Hegseth from Fox News TV, weeks after Trump appointed him, shut down the U.S. department dedicated to mitigating and investigating U.S. killing of civilians. The first ever branch chief of civilian harm assessments in that department is Pentagon whistleblower and retired Master Sergeant Wes Bryant. He spent 20 years in the U.S. Air Force, and he joins me now from Raleigh in North Carolina. Thank you so much, Master Sergeant, for coming on Going Underground. We don't even know whether there's been a ground invasion in the intervening period when this is being recorded and it being broadcast. So before we get on to the whistleblowing in Pete Hegseth's Pentagon, just remind us, you were 20 years in the Air Force and you're a JTAC. Explain what a JTAC is. And how, in a sense, that helps you to understand what we're learning through media reports, through intelligence reports about how this Trump-Netanyahu war is going. I mean, JTACs call in U.S. airstrikes and are, in effect, responsible for every bomb.
Greg, that's a good question. You know, the acronym JTAC, it stands for Joint Terminal Attack Controller. And really, it's what used to be called Forward Air Controller, which makes a little more sense to the layperson, right? So, you know, we're the people on the ground coordinating and calling in airstrikes, all manners of air power, you know, the intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance that goes into targeting, developing targeting and prosecuting that targeting, and then conducting what we call civilian harm mitigation, collateral damage analysis to avoid, you know, killing civilians, to avoid causing undue collateral damage. And so, you know, my 20-year career through the war on terror spanned both attaching to conventional and special operations teams on the ground in Afghanistan and Iraq, and then initiating and starting and operating strike cells against ISIS later in my career, hunting and targeting ISIS across Iraq, Syria, and Afghanistan.
I mean, I'll explore some of those later.
Of course, into my job at the Pentagon. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll explore some of those later, if I may. But, I mean, it's clear Trump set up a department for civilian protection. He always says he's the peace president. And as far as I understand it, I know you've explained it on numerous media outlets. We always like to be exclusive here. I mean, just explain very briefly what happened to the unit that Trump set up, the Pentagon Civilian Protection Center of Excellence, and how you were there and how Pete Hegseth didn't like it.
Right. Well, I wouldn't say so much that Trump set it up. I'm not even sure how much visibility he had on it. But, you know, during the first Trump administration, then Secretary of Defense Esper, you know, he authorized the initiation of this effort. It was called the Civilian Harm Mitigation and Response Effort. And then later under the Biden administration, Secretary Austin then codified this into law under Congress. And what that set up was a Civilian Protection Center of Excellence at the Pentagon, and then established a broader network of personnel across the U.S. government. And really the crux of it was, you know, yes, the U.S. military does pay attention to mitigating civilian harm, to lessening civilian casualties and collateral damage. But through the war on terror, we had a lot of successes and a lot of failures. And you know, the impetus was, let's create something that looks at, really sustains and improves. How can we be better at this? How can we do better going forward? And that's what this enterprise was.
And I suppose you'd say Pete Hegseth knew what was to come when he started to shut it down. I should say that, yeah, the Center of Excellence was, it came later after the initial initiative by the first Trump administration. Hegseth arguably knew what was to come with this attack on Iran, millions now killed, wounded, or displaced. So many displaced, of course, in Lebanon. You can see why he would want to shut it down and sack people like you.
Right. I mean, we've seen the rhetoric from the start. I mean, from January 20th, the day of the inauguration, there was paperwork, internal paperwork in the Pentagon. You know, I whistleblew on this, going up to senior levels, calling for the dissolution. You know, this was people on Hegseth's transition team, people aligned with Hegseth's vision already, that were looking at, you know, the civilian protection effort as one of those woke efforts that needs dissolved. And of course, we see the rhetoric from Hegseth on, you know, this reveling in death and destruction and lethality, you know, on so-called wokeness and stupid rules of engagement, you know, disregard for Geneva Conventions and just the law of war. And so it's just not surprising at all that, you know, our program and everything it was doing was one of the casualties. And, you know, let's fast forward. Well, let's look at this whole year. And the use, the illegal and criminal use of military force under Hegseth, and then going into the Iran war, where that's just been amplified.
You can't agree with supporters of Trump that when he puts out on Truth Social, a whole civilization will die tonight, and open the f-ing straight, you crazy b****s, or you'll be living in hell. These statements by the president, your president, are a means of complex 3D chess negotiation rather than an intent to mass kill civilians.
I don't agree at all, because we've seen over the years, and especially this last year, Trump will carry out things that he says, things that he puts out on social media, and that he says to the media and in public statements. You know, he had already warned about bombing the entire energy infrastructure, bombing every bridge in Iran, and began, you know, efforts toward that end. I mean, the U.S. military bombed a huge bridge in Iran that really didn't even, the military use was debatable, right? And so these are all war crimes. This is stating intent for a war crime. And, you know, even if we'll say, we'll play devil's advocate, these were somehow some kind of negotiation methods, right? Methods of pressure. What does that say about who America is? Like, what America stands for, right? That's what I would go back to. And then what does that say to the Iranian people, where, you know, one of the many reasons offered for going into Iran was to liberate the oppressed Iranian people, you know? We have not cared about the civilian population, and saying that we're going to destroy an entire civilization, you know, really doesn't show any regard for the right?
Even in the UAE press here, Trump escalates Hormuz crisis with shoot and kill order. I mean, shoot and kill order isn't usually the language coming from NATO nation powers, even if they actually do have that as a strategy. You've called the mass slaughter of 168 elementary school girls in Iran, you've called, and I think people are saying it's a triple tap strike. You said that it was not because of the fog of war. I should say they are investigating, Pete Hegseth's department, the Pentagon.
Correct. You know, we have seen an incredible departure just in the standards and practices for targeting, for strike operations, for mitigating civilian harm. An incredible departure in this last year in every operation that's been conducted. We'll take the Yemen operation last year. Hundreds of civilian casualties still haven't been accounted for by the U.S. military or spoken to. Let's take the illegal boat strikes in the Caribbean and the Pacific. I mean, we are committing summary execution there. And now in the Iran war, you know, we're starting to look like, in the way we carry out strike operations, you know, so at a very minimum, recklessly, we're starting to look like a microcosm of how Israel conducts its operations. You know, the Menam strike is just one of what's been documented by human rights organizations of, you know, on order of at least a couple hundred at this point, civilian harm incidents, killings of civilians, bombings of hospitals, schools, police stations, civilian infrastructure, even cultural sites.
But are they negligence or premeditated? Because negligence gives Pete Hegseth the way out. He can't be prosecuted for war crimes, as if anyone cares about war crime prosecutions anyway, after the Gaza genocide. But
there's a thing in international law called willful recklessness, which, you know, Israel also falls under in its operations in Gaza and elsewhere, where, you know, if you display recklessness and negligence as a pattern, that can also be a war crime, even if you are not so-called intentionally going out and targeting all these civilians and civilian infrastructure, right? And so we have, at the very least, we have a negligence, we have a recklessness in targeting. And I believe, you know, the culture that Hegseth is proliferating and what he's directing is he's directing these massive amounts of strikes, which leads to recklessness. He's no doubt directing a higher tolerance for civilian casualties. Now, these are things that he's likely not going to disclose. And it's probably being done verbally, you know, within classified communications channels. But he can direct these things as the Secretary of Defense. And, you know, all the evidence I see is that's what's going on. That's the precedent that he's setting. And this is the guidance that he's giving to the force. And somehow, our senior military leadership, you know, is bending the knee and carrying out any order that Hegseth is directing, you know, no matter how illegal, unconstitutional, or unethical, or immoral. We'll go back to the Benab school strike. You know, I've heard over and over again him responding, you know, combatively. Look at these hearings he's been in this week, combatively to our U.S. representatives and to media about how so-called precise the U.S. is and nobody's better at protecting civilians and the innocent. I would argue that, if we were that good, we wouldn't have just completely negligently dropped a bomb on hundreds of young, or missiles on hundreds of young schoolgirls in Iran. And then on top of that, not accounted for it or even apologized. You know, really our operations in this past year, our use of lethal force and our failure to protect civilians and mitigate civilian harm, especially in Iran right now, we're on par with Russia, right? And I would ask the secretary, if I were in front of him, tell me what other military out there in the world is bombing hundreds of school children right now when you're claiming that we're so-called the best military in the world at protecting civilians.
Well, Russia would, of course, deny that anything as bad as the United States at all. But where's Bryant? I'll stop you there. More from the Hegseth, former Pentagon chief of civilian harm, after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Pete Hegseth, former Pentagon Chief of Civilian Harm, Master Sergeant Wes Bryant. Master Sergeant, you know, you were talking about Pete Hegseth in part one and his role. Of course, one could say, who's Pete Hegseth bending the knee to? Because a former, actually the present British ambassador to the United States, the first one obviously, went after the Jeffrey Epstein allegations. U.S. special relationship is probably Israel, says Envoy in leaked remarks. Is it your understanding that basically Pete Hegseth is taking his orders from Netanyahu?
You know, I'd say not as much Hegseth, but Trump, you know, who Hegseth serves. But, you know, the two of them are really in line ideologically. They're both cut from the same extremist cloth. And I'd say really, Pete Hegseth seems to be even more extreme, you know, horrifyingly, than even Trump himself.
And does Pete Hegseth have a problem with Muslims?
I believe so, absolutely. You know, I think it's not covered enough, especially in major media and Western media. This kind of this extremist form of Jewish Zionism, and this that exists, you know, in Israel and by Israel and the Israeli government, right? And by these far-right Israel supporters. And then this far-right wing Christian nationalism that exists predominantly within MAGA circles, right? And there's this fusing right now of these ideologies where no matter what, you know, that we are going to, or the U.S. government and the U.S. military by extension is going to team and join with Israel. I mean, I'm convinced Israel, Netanyahu could drop a nuclear weapon on Gaza, on Palestine, and this administration would still fully support Netanyahu, the Netanyahu government and Israel. And so that's an incredible aspect here to consider as well. All of the foreign policy, you know, all of the global intervention, especially the intervention in the Middle East that we're witnessing right now, is based in large part by this ideology of, you know, revisionist Zionism and Christian, white Christian nationalism. You know, I firmly believe where Iran, even operating in the same, much the same manner as it has in the past decades, but were it filled with, you know, white Christians or white Judeo-Christians, we would not have this approach whatsoever. Just like in Gaza, you know, where Palestine filled with white Judeo-Christians. This administration, of course, and to be fair, the last administration would have immediately been calling genocide, right? And then, you know, look at even our national defense strategy. I mean, white nationalism is baked into that. It's talking about the greatest threat being being basically ethnic, you know, non-Judeo-Christian immigration into Europe. I mean, it's right there for all of us to see, and it's in all of their rhetoric.
Was your perspective shared? Was your perspective shared by other people who worked in your unit in Pete Hegseth's Pentagon?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. There are a lot of people, I'll say, still remaining in the Pentagon and across the entire Department of Defense that share the views that I'm relaying here, that are completely mortified, horrified, and ashamed at what's happening within our military, at Pete Hegseth as the Secretary of Defense.
Yeah, but what
his conduct,
Sergeant, what puzzles me here is that you mentioned Lloyd Austin earlier, because yep. That was when the department really took shape, even if Trump initiated it. And Lloyd Austin oversees it. I don't know what your opinion of him is. And I mean, he was bombarding Iraq and Syria for Al-Qaeda, it's been alleged, because of course he was supporting those elements against the Assad government there. He was sending weapons intelligence, giving diplomatic cover for the Gaza genocide. And yet your department was working, the colleagues you mentioned are all there. And yet, what happened to the protection of civilians under Lloyd Austin?
Right. That is a fantastic point. And, you know, when I was recruited into the Center of Excellence, I was recruited into the Pentagon in 2024, that was kind of in the height of my activism regarding the war in Gaza. You know, I was compiling reports to the Senate.
How did you get the job? I mean, they know your background. They know that you've seen the impact of these post-9/11 wars. Wouldn't they have expected you to be an unruly employee at the Pentagon?
Correct. You know, that shows the difference between the Biden administration and this administration, right? Where the Pentagon and even, you know, the Biden administration themselves are just fine hiring someone that's just been dissenting against them, just been speaking out against their policies, right? The last week, and then hires them into the Pentagon as an expert to advise, right, to make programs for protecting civilians better. That is the difference. There were a lot of problems with what the Biden administration was doing with the use of lethal military force as well, but specifically with support to Israel and Gaza.
A lot of problems. They started the genocide. Is it not what you just said? Is it in fact that Lloyd Austin was a Raytheon director and understands reputational management? Were you not being employed as a sort of patsy to be able to improve the PR for the Pentagon while he and the Biden genocide Joe, as he's known, were mass killing in Gaza.
You know, I can see that point and that accusation. I don't think so at all. Let's take the Civilian Harm Mitigation and Response Action Plan was primarily toward improving DOD operations, U.S. military operations. That's what we were there for. But an underlying goal of all of us at the center, I mean, we were already collaborating with our partners at the Department of State, who are charged with reviewing war crimes allegations in the use of U.S. military weaponry in Gaza, right? They weren't doing it. They were overloaded, and they weren't doing a great job at it.
I mean, I don't think any of us have any faith in Antony Blinken, clearly.
Right. And, you know, one of our underlying missions, one of the things we were working toward was to eventually become advisors for the monitoring of end use of U.S. military weapons. Because really, there was no one at Department of State that could do what we were doing, that could bring to the table our expertise, and to be able to really present to Congress and the president and say, look, Israel or whatever said country is using our weapons out of accordance with international law, outside of what we would call U.S. best practices, and this is why we need to stop funneling arms to them. These were goals that we had at the Center of Excellence as well, and no one was stopping us from that. I will add, you know, things weren't perfect, but when I, by any means, we still had a genocide, yes, being supported and supplied under the Biden administration, but we at least had mechanisms in place that may have been able to work toward preventing what we see now in the use of U.S. military force,
yeah,
and preventing things like the Gaza and genocide.
I mean, I don't have the
genocide in Gaza,
I don't have the Pete Hegseth tattoos of crusaders, honestly. But surely the fact is that was never going to happen, what you're saying. And Pete Hegseth, one of the refreshing things about Trump is transparency. For all the millions killed, wounded, or displaced by these terrible wars on Lebanon and Iran in the past few weeks. And surely one can understand that first to go should be a civilian harm, civilian protection center, given that the world knows the wars that the United States has been involved in since 1945, let alone post 9/11. Isn't it... more important to do that? I mean, I know what affected you was this terrible strike on the Kunduz hospital in Afghanistan in October of 2015, 72 killed or wounded. Isn't your fear that a department like that center of excellence might have been used for reputational management in such a strike?
You know, that's always a fear, and there was an aspect of reputational management in a sense, you know, to be able to show the American people and really the globe that here we're holding ourselves accountable. That was absolutely one aspect. Because look at what's happening now, you know, Hegseth holds.
Well, they don't care.
He's accountable to no one, right?
But they don't care, right? And they say it.
Right, exactly. And so there is an aspect of that, but I can tell you that internally, you know, regardless of what Secretary Austin's actual intent with this was, or even the Biden administration's, internally with all of the people that were doing the work inside the Pentagon and across the U.S. Military, the greater military apparatus. I mean, the goal was to be better and better at protecting civilians, protecting the innocent and war, and we were making a lot of great strides toward that end.
It just reminds, actually, it was 79 killed or wounded when you called in those strikes on Afghanistan and what you learned from that.
You're talking about the 2015 Kunduz
hospital strike.
Doctors Without Borders strike, right? Right. Well, that was, JSAT was actually deployed to the Syria theater at that time. You know, members from my home station unit were involved in that operation. So I'm quite well-versed. And, you know, you mentioned fog of war earlier. You know, that was actually a case of fog of war. I mean, there were a lot of, you know, fundamental mistakes made, both in planning and execution. But when we say fog of war, you know, you had multiple elements of U.S. special forces, of Afghan special operations forces, maneuvering on a battlefield. They have been in firefight after firefight for 3 days. And then they came up on another area. One element was taking fire. The controller that controlled the strikes was not with that particular element. They didn't have any U.S. forces with them. That element misidentified where they were taking fire from. So did the aircraft. So you had all of these elements going on, and that is what leads to the fog of war. You know, you have ground forces on the ground at risk, actively taking fire, right? And all of these moving dynamic elements. You know, fog of war is not what we see in the this deliberate remote strike campaign in Iran, where you have targeting teams have months to prepare their targets. There's no U.S. forces or partner forces or allied on the ground, actively in danger, actively in fights or taking fire from anyone. And you have literally months to prepare to vet and validate these targets to verify that what you're hitting is a valid military target under international law and U.S. law, and that it's void of civilians. And you're doing this from largely, right, from cushy offices back in the rear with all the technological apparatus that we have at our disposal. There's no fog of war there.
We're running out of time. And of course, that's why Iranians clearly believe 168 elementary schoolgirls were slaughtered on purpose. And just finally, I'm British, so I'd have to mention King Charles's visit to DC, of course. No mention of his anti-landmine campaigning late wife, Princess Diana. Though we do hear that American BLU-91 mine-laying warplanes are being used by the Trump Netanyahu coalition against Iran. What's your understanding about the impact and future impact of this laying of landmines?
Right. I've done some analysis and investigations into the dropping of, these would be aerial delivered anti-tank and anti-personnel mines. And, you know, what I've seen, I've identified these bomblets as U.S. made, of course. Still not completely verified because I believe largely the reporting comes from the Iran regime. But if so, concerning because, you know, where I saw them dropped, the pictures that I've seen being dropped in open areas and adjacent to or in civilian areas, that's not the intended use, actually, of our of these submunitions, and that's not the legal use per international law or our U.S. law of armed conflict.
Master Sergeant Wes Bryant, thank you.
Appreciate you having me.
That's it for the show. Condolences to any of you bereaved by today's NATO nation wars of aggression. We'll be back on Monday for more continuing coverage of U.S. wars on West Asia with a former Pentagon official who is now a U.S. national and homeland security official. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.